It's great to see an even more robust turnout than our inaugural chair last time. So this week we have an anonymous sponsor, but again, Rabbi Jonas Steinmetz, as I said yesterday, Avreich, where he's Rav B'Shanim, he's relatively young. Age is all relative, but relatively young, but really Av B'Chachma, he really knows so much. And we had a great share going into Hanukkah a couple of weeks ago, so we have a new topic tonight about tzitzis, or today rather about tzitzis. And everyone should get a source sheet to find a seat, and we'll be on the way.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back to everyone who, what are you on, sheets? So there's a few extra there on the back table. Right there, there's a pile. Welcome back to everyone, or welcome to the people who are first joining anew today. Just the Rabbi Madasra, just to mention, we thank the anonymous sponsor. I'll admit it. It was me. we also have sponsors in our kollel for the learning that we do inside and outside the kollel. Just to give some mention, first of all, the month of Tevis in general is sponsored by 5 Minutes of Torah. If you visit 5MinutesOfTorah.com, you'll find something very interesting, a place where people can connect during their workday. You should check it out. In the middle of the workday, they'll have a Zoom call where everyone who's at work or busy, whatever, they take 5 to 10 minutes just to learn together on Zoom. Someone else gives a share every single day. It's a very, very beautiful cause. It's worth signing up for their updates just to see if you like the speaker. You can hop on for a few minutes in the middle of the day and learn a little bit of Torah. The week of learning in our call this week is sponsored by the Kluger family in memory of Max Kluger, Barry Kluger, and Ravi Schoenfeld, whose yahrzeits are all in the near vicinity. So we appreciate that, and the anonymous donor for sponsoring this year here in the shul. Again, Bereshus the Rav Mar Da'aser. I wanted to talk today, as the Rav mentioned, about the topic of tzitzis. Now, before the whole back row leaves, just because the topic is tzitzis doesn't mean it's only applicable to men. Not because tzitzis is applicable to women, but because the topics that we're going to talk about are not only the, strictly speaking, the halacha, the practical application of wearing tzitzis or performing that particular mitzvah. This is going to be true, by the way, about most of the shiurim, hopefully, that we have. But they're actually topics that are more general, that are more relevant to mitzvahs outside of tzitzis, and even within the realm of tzitzis, you'll find some things at least that are hopefully interesting and eye-opening, but also helpful in terms of understanding the mitzvah in a deeper way. So it's not just Hilchos Tzitzis Shir, it's Inyanei Tzitzis, but it's topics that really apply outside of that as well. So let's delve into it. We said this at least for this, I don't know how long, for this couple months, we'll see how long it takes. We're going to spend time on the Tshuva's Har Tzvi. So last week we did a short biographical sketch. If you want to go online, you can find the recording where we mentioned that. But suffice it to say, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank lived between 1873 and 1960, which people here figured out how long that was, and I didn't. And he lived in Yerushalayim for most of his life. The way that we remember him was Yerushalmi Eretz Yisrael Dik Posek. And he had a lot of important psakim in all areas of halacha. There are 3 pictures on the tables right in the middle. If you want to take a look at what he looks like, that's him, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Each picture is different, so if you want to, check, it's not like a shidduch resume type of thing, but if you want to check out each of the pictures, see the different angles, you'll see he was a very holy-looking person in all the pictures. Okay, so in order to understand the first tshuva, which is tshuvas Har Tzvi, Chelek Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph, Simen Zayin, so we need a little bit of background before we even jump into the tshuva. The background is to the concept of Ta'aseh V'lo Min HaAsui. Anyone here ever hear of the concept of Ta'aseh V'lo Min HaAsui? What does it mean? Very simply put, and this exactly by sukkah. Good. Very simply put, and this is the way to translate the words. Just if you're paying attention to the Hebrew, ta'aseh v'lo min ha'asui. Do and don't use something that's already done. Don't use something that's already made. What does that mean? That means by certain mitzvos, there's a mandate, there's a necessity that a person not only perform the mitzvah based on the item that was presented in front of him, the item magically appeared in front of them. That wouldn't be enough. But rather, they have to actually make that item themselves. It can't just appear. It can't just be made on its own. You have to make the item yourself. So what's not a good example of that? Esrog. Esrog's not a good example of that. Why not? Who here made their esrog this year? Maybe you made esrog jam out of a shvius esrog or something like that, but no one here made their esrog. Some people here in Los Angeles grow their own esrog. Anyone here grow and have an esrog tree? It's pretty cool. So I saw on the other side also. The other side is the, I don't know, you don't call it that. What do you call it?
The city.
Yeah. The city. Okay. The Nebuchs. So some of the people there have a esrog tree. Actually, one of the chashuvim over there has a really beautiful esrog tree. Chazan Ish Yichus. He got seeds from a town, the Chazan Ish. he doesn't use them, but they come humongous. They're these tremendous esrogim, and he gave my kids three of them, like after Yontif, when they're back down to worth 20 cents again. So he gave like three of them to my kids. They brought them home, and whatever, they use them as football. That's not the point. The point is that you can grow your esrog yourself, but you're not making an esrog, right? You use an esrog that's presented to you. You use an esrog that's already made, and you take that for your mitzvah. That's fine. But there are certain mitzvahs in the Torah, as was mentioned on the side over here, sukkah being an example. We'll get to soon, Blina, there. There are certain mitzvahs in the Torah which demand an asiyah, which demand a making, a creation of that chefza shel mitzvah, of that mitzvah item, of that object. What's a good example aside from sukkah? Tzitzis. Why is tzitzis a good example? Because the psukim say, gedilim ta'aselecha, that a person has to make tzitzis. Gedilim ta'aselecha. You must make the tzitzis al arba kanfos ksuscha. On the four corners of your garment, you have to tie tzitzis onto them. That's one example. Let's talk about another example that was brought up a second ago. Chaga sukos ta'aselecha. Right? You have to make sukkos. Now, the pasuk is really referring to chag ha-sukos ta'aselecha shibas yamim, but the Gemara understands that to also mean that a person has to make their sukkah, which will last 7 days. This is where the famous, we're not going to talk about this now, but this is where the famous idea of the netziv, Rav Natali Tzvi Yehuda Berliner, the Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin. So he had a famous idea of a hechsher mitzvah ksuvim b'torah, that sometimes you have a mitzvah that not only is the preparation of the mitzvah chashuv significant because it's a preparation, but also the preparation itself is sometimes a mitzvah. For example, he says one example is tying your tzitzis, and another example is making your sukkah. Now, you could go to the store and buy tzitzis. You could ask someone to come to your house and build a sukkah for you, and that would be okay as long as they made it, as long as they made it for you, and that's not didn't appear magically, as we'll talk about soon. But maybe there's an added level of chashivas, an added level of significance. If I would make the sukkah myself, if I would make the tzitzis myself, it's a beautiful thing, by the way. It's not so hard to learn how to tie tzitzis. I am very, very not handy, extremely not handy. I always say I built 20% of 60% of the things in my apartment. When I used to live in an apartment, now in a house, I built 20% of them, because I would build 20%, it would come out upside down, and then my brother-in-law would have to come over and undo it and redo it. So 60% of the things I tried to build, I built 20% of them. They all came out backwards. I literally built a desk with the legs on top. I cannot figure it out. My brother-in-law had to it was IKEA, so the plastic screws are stuck. He had to make new holes to build my desk for me. Anyways, but even if you're not handy, I have no skills in that regard at all. But you can still learn how to tie tzitzis very simply. I tie my own tzitzis. I've been doing it for a few years. I did my talisim. I did my tzitzis. Very simple. And Siv says that's a chash of a thing. That's a beautiful thing to make your own tzitzis. It's a shtickle of mitzvah to prepare that mitzvah, because the pasuk says gedilim ta'aselecha. So there's this mitzvah asiyah. So what do we see by sukkahs? By sukkahs we have a mishnah. The mishnah says in Masechta Sukkah on Daf Yud Aleph, the mishnah says that you can't take. Let's say you have a sukkah that's sitting out the four walls, and you have branches from a tree that are close by, and you want to use those branches of the tree for the schach on your sukkah. You can't just simply take the branches and pull them and kind of put them on top of the sukkah, on top of the walls as the schach. You can't do that. Says the Mishnah, however, if you cut them off, that's fine. So if you kind of pull them down, then cut them off, and they get released on as the schach, that is okay, that's permissible. The Gemara has a little bit of a discussion for about an amud and a half, discussing the details of that idea of cutting it off and letting that be the schach. And the Gemara says one thing you have to add to the equation. You can't simply cut the tree and let it be the schach. You have to also be mina'aneya. What does mina'aneya mean? It means you have to shake it. Okay, you have to sort of lift up the schach a little bit, make sure that you've sort of placed the schach on top. Why? Why do you have to do that? Because, says the Gemara, there's an issue of ta'aseh below mina asui. The Torah says, chag ha-sukos ta'aseh l'cha shivas yamim. You have to make your sukkah. If you simply pull the tree down and leave it on top of the schach, that's an issue because it's connected to the ground. If you cut the tree apart and now the stuff is laying there, you didn't make the schach. The schach just happened to fall on top of your sukkah. You pulled it down, but you didn't place the schach on top. You didn't put it down as a cover, as a roof, on top of your sukkah. So that is ta'aseh below mina asui. You didn't make the sukkah. The sukkah was pre-made. The sukkah was already there, so that simply does not suffice for the mitzvah of sukkah. The other example that the Gemara brings on Tesvav in Masech HaSukkah is the case of Chotet Bagadish, that if you have a mound with some, some kasher eschach on top, and you dig out, you hollow out a cavity in that mound, so now look at that. You have four walls and a roof on top. It's a sukkah. So Gemara says that's also an issue of Taseh below Mina Asui, because really you didn't build anything. That mound is already there, then poof, magically, a cavity appears in the middle and it's your sukkah. That's not good enough, you have to make a sukkah. So that's what the Gemara tells us in two places about the mitzvah of sukkah, that has to be an asiyah, ta'aseh v'lo mina asa. It can't be made automatically. The truth is, the Gemara has an interesting application, seemingly, of this halacha, though there's a little bit of ambiguity in terms of where this comes from. The Gemara Menachos and Daf Lamed Gimel, the Maseches Menachos is really a Masechta in Kadshim. It's a Masechta that deals a lot with karbanos. happens to be in the middle of Maseches Menachos, there's a serious amount of blot which deal with the mitzvahs of Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah. So it happens to appear there. So when you hear a high school kid say, "Oh, I'm learning Menachos," don't be so impressed. They're usually learning a tzitzis or tefillin or a Sefer Torah type of halachos. They do it, I know, on NCSY Kolo. They sometimes learn Menachos. So you have to buy this huge fat Gemara, and you use like 5 pages from there to learn Hilchos Tzitzis. Okay, either way, so that's where this stuff appears. So mezuzah is there as well. In the Menachos on Lamed Gimel, the Gemara says an interesting case. It says you can't put a mezuzah on a post. Let's say you have your doorposts that are going into your home, and the doorposts are laying on the ground. So you say, I have an idea. Instead of putting up doorposts, then I have to go on a ladder and reach the part that I want to put the mezuzah on. I'll just put the mezuzah on now while the doorpost is on the floor. Then I'll put the doorpost onto the wall. Does that work? So the Gemara says that does not work. Why not? So the Gemara seems to apply, ta'aseh v'lo mina aseh. You need to make a mezuzah on your wall, but there is no wall. There's no doorpost. So you can't put it on the doorpost. Then the doorpost goes up. Oh, now when there was a doorpost, magically there was a mezuzah. That's ta'aseh v'lo mina aseh. It was already made. You didn't make the mezuzah on the wall. What's the issue with that in halacha? Anyone here remember a pasuk in the Torah that says Va'asisa mezuzos or Va'asisa mezuzah? No such thing. Uchsavtam, you have to have a ksiva of the mezuzah on the walls. There's a mitzvah of ksiva, but there's no mitzvah of asiya. So Rashi on the page there, Maseches Menachos, says, no, it's a hekish, it's a comparison, they're connected from tzitzis to mezuzah. The Arayim has a different idea that ksiva, also it can't be that it was nichtav on the wall, it has to be placed on the wall. There are different ways to solve the problem, but seemingly the Gemara is applying the case of ta'aseh v'lo mina asui to the case of mezuzah. That's important for the following reason, because this is going to help us transition. Remember, we're here to talk about Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, even though he hasn't gotten that much of a mention, except for his picture, until now. But this is going to help launch us into the tshuva at hand. What about the following case? When you live in a house, you're chayv in a mezuzah, as long as the house is dalet al dalet, as long as the room is dalet al dalet, livable space, about whatever, we'll call it close to 8 by 8 feet, that room. So you're chayv to put a mezuzah on the door going into that room. If definitely a doorway, maybe if it doesn't have a door, some of the Rishonim don't think it's chayv mezuzah, but let's assume you have a door with a door, you put a mezuzah on that door, fine. That's true if you own the house. If you own a house, you're chayv in mezuzah. What if you rent the house? You're chayv in mezuzah? So that's interesting. In Eretz Yisrael, let's talk about America for now. Let's talk about chutz la'aretz. So if you rent the house in chutz la'aretz, the Gemara seems to assume schiras is not mechayv in mezuzah until you've lived there for 30 days. Once you've lived there for 30 days, now it's really not a borrowed entity anymore. You're really showing some ownership. You're displaying some ownership over the place. Some of the poskim, the later poskim, say that maybe this metzias changed nowadays. Nowadays, a rental, the lease agreement, is such a serious level of ownership that even from day one, you already own your house, your apartment that you're renting. But, okay, that's the kind of thing that makes me feel good at night after I've given away $7,000 a month for my house. It feels like I own something a little bit. But let's assume, la halacha, that's not exactly true. Let's assume that, you're not really fully in ownership of your house for the first 30 days of the rental. So once 30 days comes, day 31, now you're chayv in mezuzah. That's what we assume. Now, a person doesn't want to live in a house without a mezuzah. You want a shmirah. You want the guarding of the mezuzah. Additionally, as I mentioned a second ago, some people say that nowadays, once you're paying rent and you have a lease agreement, really you do own your house in some way from day one. So really the right thing to do is if you're renting a house in chutz la'aretz, you should first put up a mezuzah on day one, and you'll become chayv on day 31. What's the issue that might come up? Bracha is definitely an issue, and it's related to what we're about to say.
Just appeared on day 30.
Ah. So on day one, was I really chayev? According to some people, yes, but really? No, I'm renting. And then I wait 30 days, and on day 31, what happens? I become chayev. Now I'm chayev mezuzah, and I look at my doorpost, and what's there? A mezuzah. Well, what about ta'aseh v'lo mina asui? What about the fact that I didn't make the mezuzah? I didn't put the mezuzah on the wall. It just appeared, poof, magically. I didn't do an asiyah. So according to this Gemara, it sounds like that's going to be an issue. The Minchas Chinuch has a suffix about this. The Minchas Chinuch thinks this may be an issue. And because of that, some of the posts can recommend as follows. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he recommends that on day 31, when it comes to the 31st day, that a person should simply touch the mezuzah a little bit, shake the mezuzah a little bit while it's on the wall. And that's enough to say, as if I put it on, remember, like shaking the schach, that type of thing. And then you can make your brachas at that point. When I moved into my apartment in Washington Heights 7 years ago, So my wife and I, we put up the mezuzahs day one, and we didn't have mezuzahs day one, because why? Because we were short a few, or we bought them and we had them checked. I forgot exactly what it was, but I lived in Washington Heights, and the mezuzah guy was all the way in Cedarhurst, whatever, 5 towns. If it means anything to you, it's always traffic, so there's no without traffic. It's like an hour drive. So I remember my Rebbe Paskin that I should leave at 7 o'clock, drive there and drive back, even though I missed night seder, even though I had to be on the road for 3 hours traveling to get the mezuzah, that we shouldn't sleep in the house without a mezuzah for the first night. So we got our mezuzahs, we put them up on day one. Then day 31 came, what are we supposed to do? So I had asked my posik, Rav Shechter Shlita from YU, what to do, and he had told me that it's true that the Minchas Chinuch has a suffik, and I should be concerned about it, and it's true that Rav Maisha has makel, that you can just move the mezuzah around a little bit, but he remembers the tshuva from Rav Akiva Eger, that Rav Akiva Eger says it's not enough to be mishamish, not enough to move the mezuzah around, you have to actually take it down and put it back up. So on day 31, we took down all the mezuzahs, we made a bracha on the one of them, we put them all back up that day 31. Now you're not doing tasav al manasui, it's a chumra on top of a chumra, but sometimes chumras are good. Sometimes not. Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Now, the Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, has the following, Shaila has the following discussion. Here's where we get into our tshuva. We have a little bit of background. We have a little bit of understanding what tasav al asoi means. That's what you need to know in order to read this tshuva at all. So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says as follows. Let's say you have a case, and this happens all the time, I think. You know, boys, even grown men, they wear tzitzis for a while, and they end up getting, they turn from white to yellow, correct? They end up being quite dirty. So mothers and fathers look at those dirty tzitzis, and they're always waiting for the day they can throw them in the laundry. Okay, but it's a firm kid, so he's always wearing a tzitzis. So you have to kind of get it when he's sleeping. Oh, he sleeps in a tzitzis. Okay, you got to find a way to wash the tzitzis. Fine. What's the issue when you wash tzitzis? What always happens? What happens to the strings? They get all tangled up. They get all tangled up. So what do you do? So if you live in the modern day and you're the type of person who buys pre-made salt water for the Pesach Seder, so you can go to the other island, Gourmet Glot, which doesn't exist here, you know, apply whatever exists here, which probably doesn't, but you go to the other island, Gourmet Glot, and get those things that you wrap the tzitzis in, and then you throw it all in the laundry. If you haven't seen this, it should be on your list after getting the kosher lamp for Shabbos and the Shabbos alarm and the Shabbos app for your phone, all those things. Just kidding about the last one. All those things are... Huh? Amazon has it, okay. So all those things are usable entities for washing tzitzis, but let's say you don't have that. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says that some of the women in his generation came up with a different idea. Instead of buying some expensive ball that you wrap the tzitzis in, you can do as follows. You can take the tzitzis strings, you can kind of roll them up into a small ball, a net. Then you fold the corner of the talis or the tzitzis over that and tie it together. Now you've made the tzitzis disappear. And you've tied the baguette at the bottom, so there's really not, the corners become higher up, and the tzitzis are all hidden away. And what you do is you wash it that way, and then when you release them, the tzitzis have not really been tangled, because they've stayed tight in one compact spot, so they won't be tangled afterwards. So the Tzvi Pesach Frank says that's a kunst that people came up with. A kunst doesn't really translate into English, but you would say subterfuge, which is harder than kunst. But it's a trick. It's a trick that people had for washing their tzitzis. Okay, so is that a good way to do it? Probably. It seems practical. It seems like it works. Says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, what might be the issue? Well, that's a good guess, right? Okay, why would that be an issue? What happens when I tie up those tzitzis and fold it up and tie up the corner? There's no mitzvah of tzitzis anymore. It's gone. There's no strings. They're tied up. It's not really hanging from the beged. You might have just been mevatel, the mitzvah of tzitzis. Tzitzis doesn't exist anymore. And then what happens when you release them? Poof. Magically, tzitzis are there. So you had a not kosher tzitzis. Then you let go of the tzitzis and wow, now we have tzitzis again. Now the Gemara says that's not okay in the following case. Let's say you have to make sure, the Gemara says, you have to make sure you have a beged before you have the tzitzis. How could you ever have a different case? Well, let's say you tied tzitzis strings onto four pieces of garment separately, four squares. Then you take those squares and you sew them onto a garment. That is no good. That's ta'asev elamana asoi. The tzitzis existed before the beged existed, before the garment actually existed. That's a problem of ta'asev elamana asoi. The tzitzis just appeared on this garment. It doesn't really work. It's similar to building a sukkah by first building the schach, by first hanging the schach, suspending it, then putting walls underneath. That's no good. That's ta'asev elamana asoi. You haven't built the sukkah. You haven't built the tzitzis in this case. So, how does that work here? Isn't that going to be mevatel the mitzvah of tzitzis? You want to ask something? Okay. Isn't that going to be mevatel the mitzvah of tzitzis? And when you release them, you're now starting again with a new tzitzis each time. Yeah.
Is that what you just said? Like, what if you have the tzitzis on the beged, then we had one where it was too small, so we cut it, made it bigger, and someone said, you can't do that. So what if we took the tzitzis off and put it back on?
Good. So that person was probably correct, and I have a story very similar to that, hopefully I get to. The answer is, yeah, if you took the tzitzis, I'm obviously not paskin, you have to ask your rav if it's a halach lamaisa, but it sounds like it already happened. But you'd have to retie the tzitzis. You'd have to take the tzitzis off and put them back on again. Correct. Yeah, I have a similar story that happened to me. Blin out there, I'll try to tell you about it soon. I did the wrong thing in that case. Okay. So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank starts by quoting the Shulchan Aruch HaMechaber in Orach Chaim Simenches Siv Zayin. You have it in the second paragraph over here, where the Shulchan Aruch basically says that if you have tangled tzitzis, which are all tangled up, they're all entangled one in the other, That is a problem. That is a problem, and lichatchila are supposed to separate them. That's why you see men often checking their tzitzis before they put them on, or checking their talis before they lay in the morning, because they want to make sure that not everything's tangled up and mixed up, and they want to separate it and make it look proper. If they're all tangled up, that might be an issue. Is that an issue that's ma'akev? Are you yotzi the mitzvah of tzitzis? Is it brach levatala? If they're all tangled up, that's a debate. In the poskim, the Be'er Halacha there raises a suffix about this. According to the Vilna Gaon, it seems it's possible that tangled up tzitzis are actually ma'akev. They actually ruin the mitzvah, and you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So it's very important to check them. What the other nafkamina this has, by the way, is that what about on Shabbos? Do you check your tzitzis on Shabbos? So people have different minhagim about this. But if your tzitzis are tangled up, are you allowed to check them and then separate them on Shabbos? There's two issues you have to contend with. One is that there's an issue of misakein mana, that you're fixing the beged. How are you fixing the beged? Because nobody likes to wear a beged that's all tangled up. And they're tangled up pretty tight. So you comb through with your hands and you fix them. That's tikkun mana, you're fixing the beged. So some of the poskim are machmir on that. You'll find in the poskim some are machmir on that. Ravadi Yosef has a whole tshuva about this, very nice tshuva. Seems like he misses one important point, but it's a nice tshuva, where he basically says that if you separate and you separate, gets retangled, that's not fixing a beged. That's like normal usage of this garment. This garment is always in constant state of flux, of repair, disrepair, repair, disrepair. You're not making a beged when you untangle your tzitzis. That's the way tzitzis are. You're not fixing it each time and making a new beged. That's just the way it is. That's the way you use this garment, this tzitzis. So that's not going to be an issue of tikkun mana, fixing something on Shabbos. The real issue, though, that the postman I think are really pointing to, this is, you find this in Shemir Shabbos Kolchasa, you find this in the Sefer Gan HaMelech, that's quoted by the Be'er Halacha and elsewhere, and the Shari Tshuva, and elsewhere, is really that what happens when you fix those tzitzis? That's another issue. You have a maybe you'll end up tearing. It doesn't happen too often nowadays, but yeah. Tightening the knot is a separate issue. If you tighten the knot, then that's going to be kshira.
I find the point of checking the tzitzis before you put it on is not to untangle them.
To check if they're torn.
The loop through the beged.
Yeah.
If it's possible, there's no point.
That's for sure true. There's additional reason to make sure they're untangled, but you're right. Different discussion for another time. Happens to be Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva about that. I don't remember if it's Simen Ches or Simen Vav. It's like one off from the one we're talking about right now. Happens to be. So we do rely on chazaka on the past. We don't necessarily rely on chazaka for the future. That's the beginning of the answer to your question, but it's a little more complicated than that. The question the poskim deal with here is that it's not only an issue of tikkun mana because you're fixing your beged to look nice. You're making it into a mitzvah. Meaning when it's all tangled up, it's not really usable as a mitzvah. Maybe lechatchila, maybe even b'di'eved. It's not totally kosher as tzitzis because it's all tangled up. When I untangle it, what do I do? I make it into a tzitzis I can use for a mitzvah. That's a real tikkun. That's a real fixing of this beged. Because of that, some of the poskim really are machmir on this. In the Shemir Shabbos Chasa Paskin, this way, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted as Paskin this way as well, that the person has to be careful not to untangle the tzitzis on Shabbos because it can be an issue of tikkun mana. Rav Avi was makel, others are makel, but something to think about. Maybe a person should check the tzitzis before Shabbos to untangle them, because you don't want to end up with tangled tzitzis. You don't want to end up untangling tzitzis. So you got to find some pshara, some compromise between.
What's worse?
Yeah, probably. Again, yes, the Rav, if you have a real shaila, I would guess that probably worse is to untangle on Shabbos. If it's tangled, most of the posts can assume you're yotzei b'di'eved.
Like, let's say you see the tangle, you didn't get time to do it.
Oh, if they're torn? If they're torn?
No, if they're tangled, like, yeah.
Better to wear them, I would assume. But you'll ask the shaila if it's practical. Yeah, our case is worse. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says our case is worse. The tzitzis here completely disappear. They're not just tangled up; they're gone. They're not there. They're tangled. They're tied up. They're disappeared. There's no corners of the beged anymore when you wash them. And then poof, they return after you wash them. So is that an issue or is that not an issue? So here, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank garners support from an interesting. It's Rav Kiva Eger. It's built on a whole bunch of things that we're not going to get into, but he compares it to a case of sukkah in the following case. Let's say you build a sukkah under a roof. Is that the kasher of sukkah? I think I might be messing up the story a little bit. I think Rav Schechter tells a story where he was asked once by a rav to come inspect the sukkah. So the rav, he said, was not an Orthodox rabbi, but he wanted to be nice. So he went to check the sukkah. I may be messing up some details in the story, but not the punchline, I don't think. So he went with him to see the sukkah. They took him into the shul, and they see it's a beautiful bima, and there's four poles around the bima, and on top there's a nice chach. And he shows Rav Schechter. So Rav Schechter looks at it, he's like, it's in the shul. He's like, yeah, but besides for that, what do you mean besides for that? You can't build a sukkah in the shul, that's crazy. You guys don't do that, right? Because I didn't mean to offend anyone. If you do, so of course you can't build a sukkah indoors. A sukkah has to be outdoors. It can't even be under a tree, right? You're not allowed to be blocked by things in a sukkah. Okay. Very good. So the retractable roof. So that's the question that the post can deal with here. So the Ramah in Siman Taf Reish Chav Vav Siv Gimel says, and this is exactly where we're going. The Ramah says that if you build a sukkah under a retractable roof, so that's perfectly okay. As long as you open up the roof before you eat. You can't eat inside. What? So the Ramah does not distinguish. The Ramah does not. And Matt is always there for Matt. First of all, it's sort of rooting the shear, but I like to say in a positive way. He always gets to the point before everyone else. The negative way to say it is the way I said it before. But Matt, you're always on the ball, Matt. You're always on the ball. So let's say you build it in this under this retractable roof. And then you retract the roof afterwards. So Ramah seems to not distinguish. Like you said, he didn't distinguish, though. He didn't distinguish between how you built it. You could build it under that roof. As long as you open the roof up afterwards, and you don't actually eat under a roof in your sukkah, so that's perfectly acceptable, perfectly okay. The Mishnah Berurah there in Sefkat Yud Ches quotes a Bach. The Bach says, no. Like Matt said, you have to build the sukkah without a roof over it. You can't build the sukkah inside. Why? Because what happens when you build it inside? Is that a kosher sukkah? No, there's a roof on top. It's not a kosher sukkah. What do you then do on sukkahs? You open up the roof. What do you have in front of you? A sukkah. When was that sukkah built?
Before the roof was retracted.
But was it really a sukkah when you built it then? So when did it become a sukkah? When it was already built? What's that an issue of? No, let's do it in unison. 1, 2, 3, go. Tasev Luminasi, exactly. Tasev Luminasi, that's an issue. So the Bach is machmir for this. Again, the Ramah is makel on this. The Ramah is makel, and he's lenient that as long as you retract the roof when you're actually eating, it's not a problem. But probably the reason for that is because that's an external psul. It's not like you built a pasul of sukkah, then the sukkah become kosher. The sukkah was always kosher, it just had some external prevention from using it, but it was always a kosher sukkah. But the Bach says, no, even in an external psul, even if the psul is just the fact that there's a roof there, that's still going to be problematic, and you can't use the sukkah until it's retracted, and therefore you have to build it while the roof is actually off of the top. So you need to have that roof open when you build a schach, according to the Bach, which the Mishnah Berurah quotes. No, as long as you built the sukkah first, then you throw the shlak on afterwards and take it off. Right? You can't sit under the shlak while it's on there, of course, but as long as you take it off and put it on after you've already built the sukkah, it's totally fine. It's totally fine.
So what about the case with the sukkah? I mean, you're not obligated to use the sukkah before sukkah.
Amazing question. If we have time, Belina, we'll get to that. Excellent question.
On the lower side,
yeah.
The church already was a close friend of Ramosha, had an attractive rule. We're talking about in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. There you go. So this is the Ramah. The Ramah says, I mean, he might have also done the Chumrah of the Bach. I have no idea how he built it. But the Ramah certainly says even without the Chumrah, it's okay. The Bach says, as long as you build it with the roof off, then you can put the roof on and off all you want. There's no problem whatsoever. Yeah. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, you see from here, that as long as the item was made b'kashrus, even if it then goes back and forth between kosher and pasul, it's okay. You built the sukkah, according to the Bach, being very machmir over here, according to the Bach, you built the sukkah under the open sky, then you threw a roof on top, then you took off the roof, then you threw on the roof, then you took off the roof. Are you remaking the sukkah each time? No. As long as you built that sukkah in a permissible way in the first instant, then as long as you keep taking the roof off and eating under the schach, which is under the open sky, then it's perfectly okay and it's not a problem. Says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, that's the answer to our question as well. It's true that when you tie up the tzitzis and you put them into the fold and you tie up the fold and you throw it into the laundry, there are no tzitzis there. A person can't wear that beged. It's not a kosher pair of tzitzis. That's true. But the tzitzis were made in a kosher way. The tzitzis were made originally in a perfectly permissible way. So now when it gets kosher, it's not going to be an issue of ta'asav alamana asui each and every single time. The Pisri Tshuva has a similar case in Siman Reish Pei Vav in Yerodeya. That's where the halachas of mezuzah are. So the Pisri Tshuva has a similar halacha about mezuzah that if you have, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes this, if you have a room that has a retractable roof, people must have this in this area. I mean, it's like in Florida, they have these sun, what are they called? Sunrooms? Oh, they're called Florida rooms? That's very creative. So you have a room that's like got either walls or it's got, sometimes I've seen it with, English is my second language. What's the, um, Screens. Screens. So that wasn't hard. So screens around the, or lattice or something like that, around the walls, and then you have a retractable roof to let in the sun, to let in the air. So you put a mezuzah on that because it's chayav in a mezuzah, then, oh, there's no roof. A room without a roof doesn't need a mezuzah. So now it's pater mezuzah. Now you put the roof back on. Oh, tazav lo nasli, a mezuzah appears on a room with a roof. No, this is how you use the room. It's back and forth. That's okay, says the Pesachi Tshuva. He quotes Poskim like that. Yeah, Tzvi Pesel Frank just points out that if you have a psul in the guf hadavar, in the actual entity itself, that's going to present an issue. So in the following case, and this is going to come back to your case over here, I don't know your name, but the case of the sewing the tzitzis that were too small. So in the following case, you might have an issue. If you had a beged of tzitzis, which you at some point became not a beged anymore, maybe it was too small, so it became not a beged anymore, and then you make it bigger, you add on to the beged, now it's similar to the case where you put tzitzis onto a beged that already existed, when you put tzitzis onto a beged that already existed, that's an issue, because you have done ta'aseh b'lemanasoi. So I'll tell you a case that happened to me, it's similar to your case. It's embarrassing, but it's worth it. So so when I was a bacher, I still wear a talis katan, but it mattered more, so I wore a talis katan. I wear wool tzitzis, regular wool tzitzis. I wear tzitzis with a crew neck. They do make tzitzis with a V-neck. I wear tzitzis with a crew neck. This is a chumrah, what I'm about to tell you, but there are poskim, I think the Baal Tanya is one of them, there are poskim who say that if you want the shear, the full amount of material of a beged, that it's enough, that it counts as a beged of tzitzis, that it's big enough. So the V-neck is kosher, but that space, you know, a V-neck goes like a, it's kind of like a V, I think that's how it got the name. So, and that's why it's a crew, is like a shape of a crew also, so when it's, when a crew standing in a circle. So a V-neck has like all this space in between the V, correct? So does all that space count as part of the beged or not? So a lot of the poskim say it does. A lot of poskim say it does. But some of them are machmir on this. Some of them say that since there's all this space between the V, all that open space doesn't count as part of the beged. It doesn't ruin the beged. As long as you have a lot more, you know, make up for on the shoulders and going down, but it doesn't count for part of the shear. So I always wore a crew neck to avoid that issue. Rav Schechter told me to be machmer for that. I wore my tzitzis for long enough that they had a tear. They had a tear like right down the V, they basically became a V-neck. So they had a tear right down the middle. So then I was concerned that it wasn't mitzarif to the shear. So I was concerned that the shear was no longer big enough. I wore as big a tzitzis as I could, and it was already cut, so I was thinking I'm losing part of the amount, so I was nervous. So I had a friend who knew how to sew. So my friend sewed it up for me. And he closed it up, and now it became a crew neck with a scar. Perfect. Then I thought, I wore it. I put it on, I wore it, and I went around. And I thought to myself, I wonder if this is Tasev Lomana Asui. Because what I had, according to my chumrah, I didn't have a baged before. Now I sewed it up, and I have a baged, and that baged magically has stitches on it. So maybe that's an issue. I'm like, nah, you're being crazy, Jonah. It's probably not an issue. So I went to Rav Schechter in the base medrash, I remember. I asked him, if someone would, you know, ask him for a friend. This is before people asked for friends, so I didn't even have a pretext. But I said, you know, if someone theoretically would have had a beged like this and they sold it, well, and they wore it, is that tassav and lassay? He's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's exactly the case of tassav and lassay. I said, can you excuse me for 1 second? I ran out to the hallway, ripped off my sister, my friend, said, what are you doing, getting undressed in the hallway in yeshiva? So I said, I told him the story. He's like, I know it's embarrassing now, but I promise you, one day you're gonna have a story for a shir. So his mamish. He's a Navi. So anyway, so that's the issue. Rav Bezalel Frank says it is an issue. Some of the posts can talk about this. The Ksav Sofer in Yardei has a tshuva about this as well. That if the psul is mamish in the beged and the beged disappears and then you re-sew tzitzis onto that beged, or the tzitzis, I should say, magically appear on that beged, that is going to be an issue. And the person has to be careful about that. But in our case where you just sort of roll up the tzitzis into the fold, and then you tie it on top of that, that's not going to present an issue of ta'asev l'mana asui. I happened to just punk that, luckily, Mordechai Willig called me this morning on my way to the car to coming to the shir. So when I had him on the phone, I asked him what he thought about this the sugya. So he said, I told him the shaila of Tzipasa Frank had, and he said, I hope he was mekel. So I said, he was mekel. Good. Okay, that was one psak. And I told him the story that, I didn't tell him what happened to me, but I told him the story about the, you know, the sewing the tzitzis on. He said, that's for sure ta'asav l'mana asui. I was like, I know who would do that, right? So everyone seemed to be pretty much on the same page about this one. Okay, that's the first tshuva. The second tshuva we'll try to go through in a briefer way. There's not so much background that's necessary to get into this, but Rav Tzipa Zafrank here in Chelek Aleph of Orach Chaim Siman Yud Beis, he has an interesting discussion about a famous Ma'ar Malkum. He didn't really add so much here in terms of Bekiyas, but definitely an interesting analysis that comes out. Rashi Rashi, we know, wrote the Perush on Chumash. That's like, wow, you can't move left or right without Rashi on Chumash. That's incredible. Then Rashi also wrote a Perush on almost all of Shas. Also, you can't learn Gemara without Rashi. He has on Nevi'im Ksuvim also. He has important commentary that it just explains what we're doing. Rashi was also a big rabbi and a big posek. So we don't have so much. A couple of here and there in Masechah Sukkah, you have an instance where Rashi sticks his head in and passes the shaila. In Masechah Schulin, you have an abnormal amount of times where Rashi comments that he thinks he knows the halacha on something. In Masechah Shabbos, he paskins in Hilchos Shihiyah on a topic. But regularly, Rashi doesn't paskin shailas in his commentary. He's making comments, right? He's explaining what the Gemara means. He's being your art scroll. He's being your art scroll in old French. Okay, he's helping you understand the Gemara. Once in a while, he tells you a psak halacha, but that's not what he does in his chumash and in his Gemara. But we do have a collection of piskei halacha. We have a few Sefer de Berashi that were published posthumously. One of them is called Sefer Apardes or Likute Pardes, where basically we have some of the psakim from the Rashi or from the base medrash of Rashi. So there's an interesting psak that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank here quotes from a person who asked in the shaila, where Rashi says, "We know that tzitzis you're chayiv to wear during the day, you're chayiv in tzitzis at night. You are not chayiv to wear tzitzis at night. There's no chayiv tzitzis at night." Now, there's a machlokas Rishonim, Rashi and Rambam, whether that means that a beged which is worn at night is not chayiv in tzitzis, or a person who is wearing a beged at night is not chayiv in tzitzis. That has major nafkaminas, but let's just assume for now, nighttime is not the time for tzitzis, correct? Nighttime is not a time of chayiv tzitzis. Okay. So Rashi apparently made a comment in Sefer Pardes where he said that's true if it's a dark room at night, but what if the lights are on? What if you have a candle there? Then all of a sudden you are chayiv in tzitzis. Who cares? What nafkamina? So first of all, if you weren't wearing tzitzis until nighttime and you put tzitzis on now, you can't make a bracha. But when do we ever put on tzitzis at night? Does that ever happen? Yom Kippur, excellent. So the Rama in Or HaChaim Siman Yud Ches, the Rav Tzvi Pesach quotes this here, I'm not making it up. The Rama in Siman Yud Ches, which is Hilchos Tzitzis, says that when the men come to shul Leil Yom Kippur and they want to put on their talis, so they should be careful to make sure to get there a little before Shkia, a lot before Shkia if they can. There's a lot to say. There's a whole vidoy you want to do, and there's a lot to say. Tefillah Zaka. You should take your time before Yom Kippur. But you should get there, you know, sometime before Shkia. One of the reasons the Rama says to motivate you is because you can't put on the tzitzis once it's nighttime, because you're not going to be able to make a bracha. So you want to put on the tzitzis before it turns into nighttime. Now the poskim do debate. Maybe once it's Shkia, but it's not yet Seis, since it's still lightish outside, maybe you are still, it'll relate to what we're talking about soon, you are still allowed to put on the talis, but ideally you want to get there before Shkia. Don't get into any questions. So the person who was asking this shiloh over here said, I don't understand, I have a very simple idea. Should this be an issue? Maybe not. What happens if I get to shul after it's nighttime? Say chavim already. I get there late for shul on Leil Yom Kippur. What? I'll put on my tzitzis. Why? I'm not chayiv tzitzis. I can't make a bracha. What would you argue based on what we quoted from Rashi in the Sefer Paradis? Is anyone here davening in a dark shul? The lights are on. Either the candles were lit back in the day or the lights are on now with electricity. The lights are on. So I'm chayiv tzitzis so I can make a bracha. So why did the Rama give us this whole chumrah to get to shul early? We don't like getting to shul early. We don't want this chumrah, Rama. So why are we going to shul early? We just put it on with the lights on. What's the problem? So, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank starts by saying, does this even make sense? There's another example. Really, I don't know of that many other examples, but there is one other famous example where this comes up. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Lamed Daled, it's also Gemara in Bava Basra on Kufid Gimel, says that you're not supposed to do dinei mamonos at night. What do I mean by that? Meaning when you have two people, two litigants come before you, a judge, based in three dayanim, who have to now adjudicate over this case. So they have to start that. If it's dini nefashos, they can't do it at night at all. But if it's dini mamonos, meaning a regular dispute about monetary issues, and they come to you during the day, so you start the case during the day. If it goes into nighttime, you could finish the case at nighttime, but you're not allowed to start a case of dini mamonos at nighttime. Why not? So the Gemara here has a limud for that. We'll talk about it soon. Gemara in Sanhedrin Lamed Daled. So the sma, apparently throughout history, it wasn't always so easy to get a court case done during the day. I don't know why. I don't know if it had to do with, you know, anti-Semitism and not being able to do things out in the open, but sometimes you really were forced into having a court case at night. Maybe people were working during the day. I'm not sure. But the sma in Chesh and Mishpat Simin Hei says an interesting chiddush, very interesting chiddush. He says maybe this whole halacha only applies if it's nighttime and it's dark. But what if you're sitting in a room at night and the lights are on? Maybe then you'd be allowed to judge a case of dinei mamonos at nighttime. That's what the Sma says. Now all of the Achronim jump on him. They say, that's crazy. Why? It's nighttime. When the Gemara said, according to the Gemara, it's really Pesukim the Torah. When the Torah told us that you can't judge a case at night, it didn't mean you can't judge a case in the dark. It meant you can't judge a case when it's nighttime. When you turn on the lights, that doesn't make it daytime. It doesn't make it daytime. It's still nighttime. So how does turning on the lights change anything? So apparently the Sma thought that the lights were the important part and not the nighttime. But all the Achronim, the Shach and the Tumim and everyone argues on the Sma and hit him over the head. He has no source for this. He has nothing to go on here. And it's a very strange chiddush that he would say such a thing. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, if you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you'll see. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that it's a hekesh over here. We have a hekesh of Rivim L'Negayim. We're not going to get into it now, but basically court cases are compared to Riyas Negayim, looking at Negas Aras, and you need to do that during the day, not at night. So Rav Tzvi Pesach says, so maybe the same is true about tzitzis. What kind of crazy chiddush is this? Tzitzis, you're chayiv during the day, you're putter at night. You're exempt from wearing tzitzis at night. So if the lights are on, all of a sudden you're chayiv? It's still nighttime. What are you talking about? Why would anything change if you put the lights on at night? So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, no, maybe tzitzis are different. Why? How do we know that you're putter from tzitzis at night? Oh, the pasuk doesn't say, v'hinachtem v'hilbashtem tzitzis balayla. Ba'yom, sorry, ba'yom. The pasuk says, "Uriisem oso, you shall see them." The Gemara says, "Uriisem oso," meaning someone who sees his tzitzis and chayiv and tzitzis. But if you can't see them, you're not chayiv. So at nighttime, you can't really see that well. You must be pater from tzitzis. I have an idea. Turn on lights. Now you can see your tzitzis, and you're going to be chayiv in tzitzis again. So says Rav Tzvi Pesach, maybe it does make sense to say that nighttime by tzitzis is different than nighttime by a din Torah. Because by tzitzis, the whole din was really about vision, not really about the mitzias, the reality of day or night. Happens to be where Tzvi Pesach says that if you look at the Girsa in Rashi, they got it wrong. It's not really what Rashi says. Rashi doesn't say this, but there are others. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva, has a comment on Shulchan Aruch, where he applies this sma to little tzitzis and thinks it's really true that if the lights are on, you become chayev in tzitzis, and it should make a difference halacha lemaisa. There are other, we don't have so much time to get into it, but there are other halachic Yeah, that's what I was saying we don't have time to get into, but you feel like we have all the time in the world. Okay, fine. So we'll talk about it for a second. So Rav Tzvi Pesach asked that question. He asked, We're going to repeat the question. So we know tzitzis is an example of Mrs. Essay Shazman Grama. Mrs. Essay Shazman Grama means that we have Mrs. Essay, Mrs. Losa say positive commandments, negative commandments. Negative commandments, everyone's chayiv. No one's allowed to eat treif. No one's allowed to violate Shabbos. No one's allowed to do any negative commandments. Positive commandments, everyone's chayiv in as long as those positive commandments are not dependent on time. If they are mitzvahs esei shezman grama, meaning they are dependent on time. So, for example, tzitzis are not worn at night or in Shabbos. I don't know, what's another good example of a mitzvah esei shezman grama? Lulav is only chayiv during Sukkis. Things that the time brings in the mitzvah. So Mrs. Esesh is van Gama, so women are not chayavos in those mitzvahs. Women are allowed to volunteer those mitzvahs, and there's a debate amongst the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim whether women will make a bracha on that. The Ashkenazim assume that women do make a bracha on lulav, on things like that. But Mrs. Esesh is van Gama, women are exempt from. Now, if tzitzis is classically known as a mitzvah Esesh is van Gama, the reason is, the Gemara says, because tzitzis only applies during the day and not at night. But if mitzvah tzitzis really can apply at night when the lights are on, is it really a mitzvah essay that has man grama? So it's interesting. Rav Yosef Engel, a great Galatiano Gaon, I don't think we mentioned him last time, but we'll hopefully mention him a lot more times, we nether. Fantastic svarim. So he has a sefer called Gilgoni HaShas, and he has a commentary on HaShas. He actually has in Yerushalmi and on Bavli. So in Mesechus Shabbos and Daf Chav Zayin, he says that because of your question, it can't be that turning on the lights matters by tzitzis. Because otherwise it wouldn't be a mitzvah essay that has man grama. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a more creative answer. He says that no, it still is a time-dependent mitzvah. Why? Because during the day, you're always chayiv in tzitzis. And at night, you're only chayiv in tzitzis if there's lights on. But if it's night and there's no lights, you're not chayiv in tzitzis. So night and day are different. Night is not mechayiv in tzitzis. Day is, or light is. So it's light during the day. It could be light at night, but it could also not be light at night. So day and night are different. That's his creative answer. He has bases in a Tosfos. It's hard to conceptualize, but that's his creative answer. There are other answers as well. Oh, that's the other thing I didn't want to get into. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank deals with that as well. He says, what about the exact opposite case? Let's say you have a daytime when it's very dark. Yesterday was very dark. And the lights are off in the home. I'm sorry? You guys sound like 5-year-olds. I'm just saying. Like, it wasn't that bad. It was okay. No, it was pretty bad. So... Yeah, it could happen. Right. Well, that's a more complicated question. I don't know if there's day or night. That's you have to get into if there's day or night. You have to ask like Rabbi J. David Bleich those type of questions. But let's say you had a day like yesterday. It was pretty dark. then your shades were drawn, and then it was really dark in the house. The bias afel. So are you now putter from tisis because it's really all based on seeing? So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank thinks that's not true. Obviously, you're chayiv during the day, and the reason is because you do have the ability to see, or people in another area where it's lighter can see. Daytime is a time of seeing. Happens to be, in this particular case, you can't see that well, but daytime is a time of seeing. Nighttime is a time of not seeing, so therefore it doesn't stare anything. But that was how he dealt with that question. Yeah, we'll end with this, and this is not in Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, but he has an interesting, just an interesting way to put the two tshuvas together, which relates to the question from the back before. The post can discuss in Shaila, maybe we'll talk about the answer, maybe we'll leave it for people to think about. Can you tie tzitzis at night? So I told you before, I tie my own tzitzis. I tie my talus, I tie my tzitzis. So I don't have time during the day, I'm busy during the day. So can I tie my tzitzis at night? Is that permissible? So why would that be an issue? Let's say I have lights on, but... am I chayiv in tzitzis at night? No. Simply speaking, let's assume we don't hold like this Rashi with the lights on. Simply speaking, I'm not chayiv in tzitzis at night. Right. So I tied my tzitzis when I was exempt from tzitzis. Then I wake up in the morning and I want to put my brand new pair of tzitzis on. And who made those? Me, last night. Well, when did they become tzitzis? This morning. Exactly. So that's why it was related to your question from the back. So the poskim talk about this. The Prima Gadim raises this issue. Some of the poskim are bothered. The Prima Gadim is even bothered by it. But what a lot of the poskim point out is that what are you talking about? Obviously, we have a case of sukkah where we build a sukkah. Nobody builds the sukkah on sukkahs. You build your sukkah a week before, a day before, 2 days before, 3 days before, whatever you have a chance to build your sukkah. You build it well before the time of sukkahs really sets in. So you see precedent in halacha clearly that building before the time of chiyuv is not the problem of tasav l'asoi. Why not? That will leave for food for thought. Why is that different than any of the other cases? Is it different because it's not a psul in the item itself, but rather it's just that the item is really totally kosher, but the time hasn't arrived yet? Is it some other reason that you would say there's no issue over here? That is subject to debate in terms of the reasoning, but we'll leave it for now. B'siyat d'shmaya and b'lina there next time.
Which should relate also to day one in the apartment.
Which relate also to day one in the apartment, because it wasn't the zman chiyuv yet. Right? Right. So, B'li Neder Mitzvah Shem will be back in 2 weeks, and we'll talk about something else entirely. Everyone have a wonderful day.